Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in to the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Chase McCabe. He is Ryan Porth. Marquise Munson is hanging out at the Wholesaling Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, what's up?
How we doing, Chaser?
Well, I'm feeling good. You know, we were just texting, and I said I have to open the show to tell you about a dream I had last night. Now, my story to open the show does not even hold a candle to what Jared Stillman opened Jared and the GM with yesterday. I'm still in shock by that.
And if you're listening and you missed that, you need to go on demand and listen to hour one of Jared and the GM from yesterday, because you will not believe what happened at his house over the weekend. And it is not a story suited for children. I will go ahead and say that, but it was all caps wild.
Yeah. I was telling somebody about it last night, and they were like, wait, he made that up. I'm like, no, he didn't. Nope, it's true.
Yep. I don't know what I was doing. You couldn't make it up.
Yeah, and the short version is Jared walked into his house and a stranger was in his house. That's the crux of the entire story. But again, check it out. On demand, you have to listen to the whole thing, and then Floyd's reaction, because that was the first time that Floyd had heard the story. So this was my dream, and this ties in. It's a tie-in. It ties into what we were talking about.
Okay.
What we were talking about today. So I was reading up on some things last night, and we know that the Tennessee Titans, according to multiple reports, Albert Breer's put it out there, Peter King's put it out there, they have hired Monty Osenfort to be the director of player personnel, and he was the head of college scouting for the Patriots, so another Patriots tie. So I don't know if it was because I was reading that and I was reading Patriots, but I had a dream last night that I worked for Bill Belichick.
Oh my gosh,
that was the dream. That's the portions that I remember, and I don't know how you have been through this, but my dreams have been pretty vivid and pretty long during this quarantine, and I know a lot of people have had that, and I would love to know why. I would love to know why that's a thing, but they have been much more vivid and detailed and long during this. But yeah, I was in meetings with Bill Belichick. Like, I don't know what my job was. I don't know why he hired me. I don't know why what I was doing, but I worked for Bill Belichick and the Patriots, and we were having conversations with each other, and that's when I woke up. I was in the middle of a conversation with Bill Belichick and woke up, and I was like, why am I working for Bill Belichick?
Was Floyd in your dream?
Yeah, there were portions where Floyd was in my dream. So that's why I think that
because
your brain does that.
Oh, I know. I know. We've all had just crazy, crazy dreams that you – some you can share on the radio, some you can't share.
Yes. I like the ones you can't share. But.
Well, yes, but I would say the craziest dream that I've ever had was this would have been in the last 8 to 10 years, and I graduated from Franklin High School in 2008. So this would have been, you know, within 5 years of me graduating from Franklin, and someone kidnapped or someone held Franklin High School hostage in my dream.
Oh, no.
And we were all in the bathroom, in bathroom stalls, hiding. And the person who held Franklin High School hostage in my dream was going around with a chainsaw and cutting people's heads off. And
good Lord, man.
And I was sitting there in the bathroom stall, and the guy comes into the bathroom with the chainsaw, and that's when I woke up. So I don't know if I got my head cut off or not.
Started talking about the Reds.
No, I did not see Joey Votto inside Franklin High School in a dream. I almost got my head cut off by a chainsaw.
That's not good.
Two polar opposites there. But yeah, that's probably the craziest dream I've ever had.
That is something. Look, I've had crazy ones, but working for Bill Belichick, I woke up and my first question was, I wonder how much he was paying me, because I bet that paycheck was pretty good. But nonetheless, I tried to tie it in to what we were going to discuss today. But as I mentioned, the Titans, it looks like, and I was going through because you hear director of player personnel, that obviously sounds important because it is, and I'm thinking, have they had that before? And they have a vice president of player personnel, Ryan Cowden, but I guess this is they're bringing him in to be the director of player personnel, Monty Osenfort, who has been with the Patriots. Floyd Reese, our resident GM, co-host of Jared and the GM, discussed this yesterday on their show.
He is a very well-respected, very smart, very knowledgeable personnel guy. You know, has been mentioned for a lot of GM positions. I think, you know, has had a chance to interview for one and not interview for another. But, I mean, he's at that level. You know, Monty was, when I was there, was a scout. He kind of went from, you know, what they do is they have a scout and then they have area scouts and then they have national scouts and then you become like an assistant college director and then director. And I think was ready to, you know, his next move would have been to a GM type position.
Floyd Reese on Monty Osenfort, and he knows everybody, in case you haven't figured that out by now. I mean, go to the combine with him and you will meet anyone and everyone that you have ever thought of in the NFL, because he literally knows everyone. But that's a glowing recommendation. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know anything about this guy, because I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's another move based on the credentials that he has, based on what Floyd just said. That's another one of those moves of John Robinson hiring somebody that is going to make this team better.
Well, you would think. We'll see if it actually turns out that way. I mean, Monty Osenfort's, you know, he's not the one making the draft picks in New England, but he's a part of that draft process, a big part of it, if you're the director of college scouting. And, I mean, we've said this here in the last couple weeks, Chase, that the Patriots drafts have kind of, you know, waned a little bit here in the last 5 years or so. So, you know, maybe there was something else going on in New England that was not related to Osenfort that has led to the drafts not being as good as they once were in New England. But nevertheless, John Robinson getting another smart football mind. I trust Floyd. I trust his evaluation of Osenfort. And the fact that Floyd's been around him and basically says the next step would have been GM, and that Floyd was a little surprised that the Titans were able to get him in this capacity after Osenfort's contract ended after the draft with the Patriots. I think that says something that John Robinson was able to lure Osenfort here, and it probably lends to the question of how long is Osenfort actually going to be here? Is he going to be here just 1 or 2 years and then move on to be a GM elsewhere, or is he going to be here longer than that?
Yeah, I know that this isn't really something people think about, because you just want your team to be good. You don't care about, you know, assistant coaches going somewhere and being a head coach, or, you know, player personnel people going and being GMs. But how many times do we talk about the Patriots and, well, this guy left the Patriots to you know, run this team, or this guy went to be the head coach? So to have some of that, and I guess it's already started with the Titans with Matt LaFleur, even though he was only here for a year, going to be in the head coach of the Packers and taking them to the NFC Championship game. But from a just a national view standpoint, it is cool to have some of those conversations. And, you know, so like I said, this guy just got hired. Who knows how it's going to turn out? Who knows if it's even the right move? But if we are having conversations here in the near future about some of these people that Robinson has brought in going on to other teams to be GMs, be in higher positions, that's only going to up the stock of John Robinson and the Tennessee Titans. So again, that's not something that everybody really thinks about, but it's still, I think, a big part of his resume and a compliment towards him.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. The more smart football people that you can put in your front office, the better you're going to be in the short term and the long term. And if Osenfort has a great eye for talent, then, you know, we already know that John Robinson has done a pretty good job of drafting since he took over the Titans, certainly better than anything we saw from Mike Reinfeldt and Rustin Webster. If Osenfort can make it just that much better, then yeah, this is a good hire.
So you told me last night that you had a thought on the backup quarterback position for the Titans that you wanted to share. So I will turn it over to you so you can blow my mind with your thought.
Well, I'm not going to blow anybody's mind with this thought, but it was a thought that came to mind yesterday as I was driving home from the office, my one day in the office this week. You know, with Ryan Tannehill, we all think that this team needs a better backup than Logan Woodside or Cole McDonald, right? I mean, yes. Logan Woodside and Cole McDonald, if Ryan Tannehill goes down, the Titans are screwed. Even if it's just for a month, we don't think Logan Woodside or Cole McDonald is going to really put up that much of a fight as a quarterback, at least from what we know. So we've had the discussion for the last month or two of what backup quarterback could the Titans go out and sign. Is it Joe Flacco, who's getting up there in age? Could it be Blake Bortles? Could it be somebody else? Could it have been Andy Dalton, who just signed with the Dallas Cowboys over the weekend after being released by Cincinnati? And there have been some moves in the offseason that the Titans have made, especially recently, that have kind of tied into the whole there may not be much of an offseason program before training camp or preseason starts.
Okay.
So Logan Woodside knows Arthur Smith's offense. He's been through it with Arthur Smith at a much lower level than backup quarterback, but he knows what the Titans want to do. Is that the reason why the Titans still haven't gone out and found a backup quarterback? Because Logan Woodside knows the offense, and if Ryan Tannehill goes down, the best bet of someone knowing the offense is Logan Woodside rather than bringing in some washed-up veteran.
That is a good theory, and I kind of thought that's where you were going with that. I also will say that I believe that it's just low on the checklist because there were so many other things that had to get taken care of, you know, with free agency and the draft. And look, I even put Derrick Henry. They needed to get him tagged, and then once he signed the franchise tag, you know, that wasn't as big of a priority. I mean, Floyd said it the other day that they're probably not really talking all that much right now because they don't have to. They still have time. I mean, there are offers there. They've had conversations. So it hasn't been as big of a priority because they had so many other things that they had to take care of. Now they got to get the draft pick signed, and so they can get all that moving. But I believe that it's going to be addressed. We brought it up with, you know, I asked him last week. I said, is the backup quarterback on your roster? He gave the GM answer, but he didn't say no. Or he didn't say yes. He didn't say yes or no. I mean, he didn't answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he's still thinking about it. There are some, I would say, good backups, decent backups available. Joe Flacco, in my mind, would be a good one to bring in here, just to have in the room, but is a serviceable guy that if Tannehill goes down, I think you have faith in Joe Flacco to win you some games.
But do you look at, and I don't disagree with Flacco, although he is getting up there in age and he's got, you know, the neck injury that could force him to just retire altogether. I mean, do you look at what the Cowboys did with Andy Dalton and in hindsight say, huh, I wonder if the Titans expressed interest in Andy Dalton. I wonder if the Titans should have signed Andy Dalton for $7 million and only $3 million guaranteed.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been my vote. I mean, I wanted Andy Dalton.
The fact that they had Ryan Tannehill as their backup quarterback last year is the only reason why they even sniffed the playoffs, let alone advance to the AFC Championship game.
Right.
They didn't devalue the backup quarterback position going into last year. Now, they knew Marcus Mariota had a lot of troubles on the field. He had a lot of troubles of staying healthy. So that made it more of a priority. But those were all question marks for Ryan Tannehill going into last year as well. And if Ryan Tannehill does not duplicate what he did in 2019 here in 2020, and the injury bug strikes again with Tannehill, I mean, he missed, I believe it was 24 games in the three seasons before last season.
Right.
I mean, he's been injury prone leading up to his career with the Titans. So if you don't have a stable backup quarterback, and Ryan Tannehill goes down for a month, that alone could keep you out of the playoffs in 2020. And I would hate to see that happen. I would hate to see the Titans just go in with Logan Woodside and Cole McDonald and have them battle it out in training camp to be the backup quarterback. You know, some dude from the AAF and another from, you know, Hawaii in the seventh round to be the backup in 2020. I want to know the thought process behind this and whether or not they're actually going to pursue a much better backup quarterback option than Woodside or McDonald.
I hope that they do, because there are solid backups and then there are insurance policies. And as much as I love what Ryan Tannehill did last year, I still think this team needs what he was, and that is an insurance policy. And that's I think, what they need to address. So I agree with you completely, and don't really like what they have with that situation right now. When we come back, Ryan, who has the most impressive NFL coaching resume? We will discuss that when we return here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? I love this song. Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill, or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. It is The Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and Ryan Porth. Obviously yesterday, Ryan, was a tough day with Don Shula passing away at the age of 90. One of the greatest, if not the greatest, coach of all time. There truly is an argument now with what Bill Belichick has accomplished in his career, and his career is still going. But who would you say is the most impressive NFL coaching resume? This is a question that you know, for me, I have to probably lean towards Belichick, but there are definitely some good answers.
Well, I think it starts with Belichick and Shula as the two most impressive resumes. You know, a lot of people consider Vince Lombardi as the greatest NFL coach in history because of what he did for the game. The Super Bowl trophy is named after him. He went 9-1 in the playoffs with the Packers. He had an impressive winning percentage as a head coach with the Packers. That winning percentage was 738, which is going to be almost impossible to duplicate in today's NFL. But he doesn't have the longevity of a Don Shula or a Bill Belichick. And Don Shula, including the playoffs, has 347 wins. When you take out what he did in the playoffs, I believe that's 328. You would have to go 20 seasons of going 16-0 to fall 8 wins short of 328. 20 seasons of 16-0 gets you to 320 wins. Like it is super impressive what Don Shula did over his time with both the Baltimore Colts and the Miami Dolphins. But when you look at Shula's resume compared to Bill Belichick, Shula only won 2 Super Bowls in his 6 trips to the Super Bowl. Bill Belichick, 6 Super Bowls, 9 trips to the Super Bowl. Both are the most in NFL history. And I would think Belichick at 304 wins, including the playoffs, so he is 43 wins short of Don Shula. I would think that Belichick is 5 or 6 years away from breaking Shula's all-time records, and I think he does get it. But here's where Shula has Belichick beat on the resume, Chase, is the fact that Don Shula coached 3 Hall of Fame quarterbacks in his career between Baltimore and Miami with Johnny Unitas, Bob Greasy, and Dan Marino. And he also, in the first half of his coaching career, only had 14 games in the regular season to play instead of 16, like Bill Belichick has had his entire career in the National Football League. So I think when you get down to it, you are splitting hairs. You know, Belichick has done it in free agency. So I would probably lean Belichick in this conversation over Shula, but that's a close one too.
Yeah, I will. And you got to mention George Papa Bear Halas too, even though he was very early on. It was a
leather helmet era.
Yeah, but I mean, he still has 318 wins, sure. And he was, that was the era where not only was the head coach, I mean, he was everything. He was the owner. I mean, he was the GM. He ran the Bears, and had 318 wins in his coaching career. So definitely have to bring him up. This is one piece of criteria that I look at. And this is what I believe separates Shula and Belichick from all the rest. It's not just Super Bowls. I know that, you know, with postseason, it's very important, as Darren McFarland will remind me of if we get into this conversation, because I have said that time and time again about Bill O'Brien. So the postseason is obviously very, very important, and Belichick has had a lot of success, as we know, in the postseason. Don Shula did too, even though he only won two Super Bowls. But I think if you took Don Shula and you took Bill Belichick and you plopped them down in any era in the NFL, they win. How many guys can you say that about?
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, I don't think you can say that about Landry, and that's coming from a diehard Cowboys fan. I don't think you can say that about Lombardi, because the things have changed so much. And I know that Don Shula, things had changed a lot since they, you know, the undefeated season, but he coached for a long time and saw the eras change. So I feel like those two, you can plop them down anywhere and they're going to be successful.
What about Bill Walsh?
Bill Walsh is another one. Bill Walsh could definitely be in this conversation.
Well, I meant Chuck Bill Walsh in the conversation that you're bringing up of, you could plop them in any era and they would be successful.
Yeah, I think you could.
Okay. Would you include Chuck Knoll from the Steelers heyday?
That's a good one.
I think he's more old school than,
yeah,
because than Belichick or Shula.
Because what were they known for? And I know that you'll still hear the phrase, defense wins championships, but... And it's true, you have to have a solid defense, and Belichick has done that. But that was what they were built on. They had Bradshaw, but if they don't have the steel curtain, they don't have the success that they have either.
I mean, this is where Belichick and Shula, for me too, are head above shoulders with almost everybody else when it comes to just the resume. Is Don Shula only had two seasons with the Dolphins where he finished below 500 out of the 26 that he spent in Miami. Two of 26 below 500. Bill Belichick, 17 straight 10-win seasons. 17 straight 10-win seasons, 17 AFC East titles, 19 straight seasons above 500. Like, that is A, longevity, and B, doing so where the eras of football were changing. And I think that lends to what you're getting at of Shula and Belichick are two of the coaches that you could plop in any era and excel.
Well, and I heard Maverick was wanting to weigh in on this too,
Maverick always wants to weigh in. And you know what, Maverick, he's just not going to get his opportunity. Just like yesterday, he's getting put in timeout by my fiance Amanda. So yeah, Maverick,
his promo like Stanley.
Yeah. Maverick's radio days, are over at least for today.
This is what I think what we're about to get into is going to be what could put Belichick in just a league of his own, because all of his success in the National Football League have been with who?
The Patriots.
Well, a player specifically.
Oh, well, Tom Brady.
Right. We're about to see just how good he really is.
No, it's a very fair point. That's why I bring up in Miami and Baltimore, Don Shula had Unitas, Greasy, and Marino. He coached three.
He did it with three.
And three different Hall of Fame quarterbacks in terms of the styles of play, where Belichick had to do it with Brady and only Brady, and Brady is the GOAT. So there lies the whole debate of who's more responsible for the Patriots dynasty, Brady or Belichick. And that's a conversation that will go on for years. But you're right. I mean, if Jarrett Stidham is a complete bust and does not prove to be a starting quarterback and the Patriots just go into that quarterback cycle that a lot of teams find themselves in, then would you consider that a black eye on Bill Belichick's resume if that happens?
I mean, I don't know if I would black it, but I definitely be a conversation because, look, now I know it was the Browns. It was the Cleveland Browns, but 6-10, 7-9, 7-9, 11-5, 5-11 fired. And then he gets to New England without Tom. He had Bledsoe, 5-11. And then Bledsoe goes down, Tom comes in, everything changes. And I don't know if you can definitively say that Tom Brady was the Messiah and he was just the one that changed it all, but he had a big part of it. He had a big part. I mean, he was the major part of that success. So I'm not trying to sit here for any Patriot fans or Bill Belichick fans that might be hitting their radio right now thinking that I'm saying he's overrated, he's not a good coach. No, I'm not saying that at all. But the bulk of the – all of the success as a head coach, not the bulk of it, all of it came with Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see what he does without him. This – it's the same thing for Belichick and as it is Brady, and neither one of them are ever going to admit it, but it's the truth. They want to see what they can do without the other because they're always going to be tied together. Now Tom has a chance to do it with Bruce Arians for a couple of years in Tampa, and Belichick has a chance to do it with Jared Stidham, Cam Newton, Ryan Poorth, I don't know. But we're going to see just how good he can be. And you know, one thing that they're going to get into in The Last Dance, they showed a clip that the year and a half that Jordan was gone was Phil Jackson's best coaching moments because he didn't have the greatest player in basketball. How can Bill Belichick do the same thing?
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great point, but when you're looking at the resumes as a whole, I understand you including George Halas in this conversation. For me, it's, you know, the era of football with leather helmets is
sure
just so archaic to include in the same conversation as someone like Shula or Belichick. Not to discount what George Halas did, but the errors are just completely different.
Yeah, but there would be that guy that if one of us didn't bring him up, they'd be like, totally. How can you not bring up George Halas? So I get it. And there are other ones, but I think Belichick and Shula, this are the majority of this conversation. So now I raise the question, and I know he's got a long way to go to even be in this conversation, but what does Mike Vrabel need to do to be viewed as a great NFL head coach going into year three? We'll discuss that when we come back. It's the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Many local businesses in Middle Tennessee are still open and ready to serve you during these uncertain times. Help them out by visiting rocknashville.com for delivery, pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses, rocknashville.com. Chase McKay, Brian Porth, Marquise Munson, back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by rumbleon.com. It is the Rundown. What does Mike Vrabel need to do, Ryan, to be great? That's all he wants to be. He just wants to be great.
How can Mike Vrabel go from good to great?
Oh, you did it. I set you up, but you did it.
I did do it.
Yeah, you did. It's a fair question. He's only going into year three. The first 2 years, you like what you see. He's had a winning record both years. He made the playoffs in year two, went to the AFC Championship game. There's a lot to build on. But I would say, looking at it as a whole, he has got a long way to go before we even have the conversation about being great. There were mistakes that he made last year that you want to see go away this year. Decision-making continues to be something that when he's in the heat of the moment, sometimes he may think a little too much like a player, even though I mean, you listen to guys talk about him. That's what they love about him, that he has that player mentality. Nate Washington brought it up on game night on Facebook Live of their year together, in Houston, that was the player mentality, even though he was a coach. It's finding that balance. But he's been around the right people. He's been around Bill Belichick. I'll even give some credit to Bill O'Brien for some of the things. He's been around him. Urban Meyer, of course. So he's been in the right rooms with people, and of course played for Belichick, played for Bill Cowher, but he is a long way away from being great. But so, he should be. He's in year three.
So how would you, Chase McCabe, define great when it comes to NFL head coaches?
That's a good question, actually.
I'm serious. How would you define great?
Great would be it to me. It's more than record. Obviously, winning championships. That's the name of the game. That's why everybody gets into this, is to win a championship. So you have to include that. But I believe the great coaches are the ones that players clamor to play for. That they know that if they have an opportunity to play for Bill Belichick, they would love to go play for Bill Belichick. They would love to go play for Nick Saban. They would love to go play for Coach K. Those type of coaches of you just, I would just love to be able to say that I played for that guy, even if it's for only a year. So I believe that is a part of it. A great coach is somebody that when they walk into a room, you know that they're in charge, and it's not by any, they don't have to say anything. That, you know, when Belichick walks in, you know who the big dog is, and it's because his actions speak for himself, and he has that kind of leadership. Those are a couple of qualities. How would you answer that?
Well, I mean, for you to be a great coach, you have to be in the playoffs a lot more times than you're not. You have to have a lot of great on-field success to be considered a great coach. And some people may say you have to win a Super Bowl to be considered a great coach. And the word great is kind of used loosely, I guess you could say. You can say Bill Belichick and Don Shula are great coaches. Well, for this conversation, I would say Don Shula and Bill Belichick are legendary coaches, and we're not even getting into the conversation of how does Mike Vrabel become a legendary coach, because I think you would agree that you'd have to win multiple Super Bowls to become a legendary coach in the National Football League.
Absolutely.
But I'll ask you this. Did you consider Andy Reid a great coach before last season?
I considered him a very, very good borderline Hall of Fame coach that never won the big one.
Why wasn't he great?
Because he didn't win the big one.
So in your mind, he has to win the big one, when you just said a few minutes ago
it's a major part of the conversation. But at the same time, I'm going to contradict myself. Dan Marino is a great quarterback, and he didn't win a Super Bowl.
So then why wasn't Andy Reid a great coach? I mean, he won 207 regular season games and went to the playoffs a crazy amount of times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 14 times. The 15th trip to the playoffs was the first time he won a Super Bowl.
It's the choke jobs. I get that. I guess that's why I think that way. It's the choke jobs, because he's come so close and then something happens where he loses the game. I mean, I look at the year before, the AFC Championship game against the Patriots. They should have won that game, and they didn't. The countless times that he took the Eagles to the NFC title game, they only won one of them. And then went to the Super Bowl and then lost. So that's, I think, what I look at. And you know, even with – I'll use an example that's really close to home for me. I love Bobby Cox as the manager of the Braves. He's a Hall of Famer. He's great in my mind. But they – and I was watching the 95 World Series the other night. They should have won three of those at least. Now, we were talking to Matthew that we work with, that they should have had three World Series and they didn't. So that bothers me. You can call it a choke job, whatever you want to put it as, but that's the category that I had Andy Reid in, and really he's probably still there, even though he has the one. But so, I still think, you know, now so, he's obviously great.
So the comeback by Patrick Mahomes in the fourth quarter now makes you feel like Andy Reid is a great coach. Off that,
you got me. Now you got me thinking, because I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I think he's been a great coach since he took over in Kansas City and started taking them to a bunch of different playoff appearances. And the fact that they got the most out of Alex Smith, and Alex Smith was a pretty good quarterback, and they won a lot of games with Alex Smith at quarterback. Then Andy Reid makes the bold decision to go with Patrick Mahomes after Alex Smith has a season in which he was the highest rated passer in the National Football League, and that's when the Titans beat them in the AFC wildcard game back in January of 2018. That was a bold decision to move on from Alex Smith and go to Patrick Mahomes at the time, because none of us knew what Patrick Mahomes was going to be. And I think Andy Reid, we would even admit that he didn't know Patrick Mahomes was going to be this good this early. And Patrick Mahomes in his first 2 years goes to the AFC Championship and then wins a Super Bowl. And the fact that Andy Reid won a ton of divisions in Philly, he won 6 divisions with the Eagles, mostly with Donovan McNabb, and now has won 4 straight AFC West with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now he has a Super Bowl on his resume. I would say Andy Reid is a great coach. And for Mike Vrabel to become a great coach, you can't just go 9-7 every year. And I think everyone would agree with that. But Mike Vrabel with the Titans, and possibly with another franchise after the Titans, is going to have to go to the playoffs a lot and win division titles and knock on the door of the Super Bowl multiple times to even be in the right. conversation
he's
of
done it once.
Being a great coach.
And
he's done it once.
And he didn't even win the division.
He's done it once, but Andy Reid has knocked on the door many times of going to the Super Bowl. He went to a Super Bowl and lost to Belichick back in the 2004 season. Went to the NFC Championship game in Philly 4 times. Went to an AFC Championship game with Kansas City and lost to Belichick. And then finally wins the Super Bowl. But I would say Andy Reid was a great coach before he won a Super Bowl because of the longevity in which he did it, and him doing it impressively with the Eagles and then doing it impressively with the Chiefs. And, you know, he had to have been a huge part of that decision to move on from Alex Smith to Patrick Mahomes. And it was, you know, one of the best decisions that Kansas City's ever made, almost like Georgia moving on from Mark Richt to Kirby Smart. I mean, a lot of people criticized the decision to move on from Mark Richt and move on to Kirby Smart because you knew what you had with Mark Richt, even though he couldn't really win the big one at Georgia. Now you have a coach in Kirby Smart that has taken that program to another level, just like Andy Reid has taken the Chiefs to another level. So I would say, I mean, yes, Andy Reid's a great coach. And for Vrabel to get to that point, it's going to have to be more than a decade of him making regular playoff appearances, making chicken salad out of you-know-what, and maximizing the potential of all of his teams in the quest of actually, you know, competing for a Super Bowl.
So you have helped me come to a realization on something, because you've helped me work through this. So I agree with you. Yes, he was great before winning the Super Bowl. That's my final answer. I think it's okay, and we're scared to admit this sometimes. It's okay to say that somebody is great and they still make mistakes. They still have choke jobs on their resume.
Every coach in the National Football League, any coach who's ever coached in the NFL, has had some sort of egregious mistake that they would like to go back and fix. And that kind of goes back to your conversation or your mentioning of Mike Vrabel. And it would have been in the first 5 or 6 games of this past season where he was making some decisions that left a lot of Titans fans scratching their heads. There's a lot of coaches in the National Football League, even great ones, that have made similar decisions that Mike Vrabel made. It's that, you know, he was on a cold spell with those decisions of not working and backfiring on him, and that's what had a lot of Titans fans up in arms in September and early October last year.
The great ones learn from those mistakes, though. That's the point I'm getting to. And I think Andy Reid has. And the greatest move that he made that he didn't know at the time if it was going to work or not, but he did it. It was a gamble. Was Patrick Mahomes. That will forever be written in the history books of that's the greatest coaching decision that he ever made. And so many times you see – I mean, Belichick, I guess you can say the same thing. He didn't have a choice. That was the backup quarterback, but he stuck with Brady. And look what happened. So those are, and a lot of times that's just blind luck. But I think they knew they had something, they felt they had something special in Mahomes. But he made the move, year two, and a couple of years later, they have a Super Bowl. So we'll see what that move is for Mike Vrabel.
Well, and I think you also have to consider in this conversation with Andy Reid is that he's won a lot of games without a Hall of Fame quarterback pre-Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Donovan sure. McNabb's not going to the Hall of Fame. Alex Smith isn't going to the Hall of Fame. And he won a ton of games with those two quarterbacks where other coaches probably would not have won as many games. Now, you can make the argument that the teams around McNabb, the teams around Alex Smith, were pretty stinking talented, and that's true. But there would have been a lot of coaches that wouldn't have done what Andy Reid did with those two quarterbacks. I mean, McNabb was typically overrated in Philly. Alex Smith, glorified game manager, had some great seasons before his leg injury, but was never on any sort of track of being a great quarterback in the league.
Sure.
And the fact that Andy Reid did what he did with those two individuals is impressive in itself.
The NFL is going to release their schedule on Thursday, but there is one major media member that disagrees with this. You'll hear from that person next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you own or manage a small business? Are you open and want to let people know about that? Then Free Business Friday on ESPN 102.5 The Game is for you. This Friday, we're offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. This is a no-cost, no-catch offer. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. From your friends at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you. Darren Donick and Chase coming up at the top of the hour. We'll have a big show for you. Christian Fulton, new Titans cornerback, going to join us at 11. And former Tennessee Vols basketball coach and Michael Jordan's college roommate, Buzz Peterson at 11:30.
Very cool.
Or 11:20, I guess. Should be a lot of fun to talk to him and have
him on.
Can't
wait to hear that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure there are some stories for sure. Okay, so the NFL is going to release their schedule Thursday night. And they always make a big to-do about this, and I kind of get into it, and I like seeing how many primetime games, you know, teams will have. That's a question for the Titans. I'm setting the over-under at 2.5. I'll take just over at 3. So that's a good
over-under.
Yeah, that's what I think it'll be. I think it'll be 3 for the Tennessee Titans this year. But there's one media member, a prominent one, that disagrees with this. MMQB's Peter King.
I disagree with releasing the schedule this week. There's no need to do it. It's not going to just start creating a bunch of commerce. People aren't going to start, planning road trips and buying plane tickets and buying tickets to games. I mean, normally that's why you put out a schedule in April. It's kind of a marker in the road for you to really start looking at, okay, here are the games I'm going to this year and all this other stuff. I mean, who's planning that now? You don't even know if any fans are going to the games in September and maybe all through the year. So I would look for that.
Peter King on the schedule release and disagreeing with that. So he brought up, you know, selling tickets and that's what usually happens and that you don't know what's going to happen in September right now. That's true. But I kind of get this feeling that the NFL, their attitude is like, you know what? Business as usual until we're told that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I disagree with that. The other sports don't have the luxury of doing that because this all happened in the middle of their seasons or towards the end of their seasons, or for baseball at the beginning. So they didn't have a choice. The NFL does. Now, if we're still in this situation or a similar one when you get to, you know, end of June and July, then, yeah, they're going to have to change their way of thinking. But they don't have to do that right now. So I don't really have a problem with them releasing the schedule. Are you setting people up for possible disappointment? Sure. But they've also been forthcoming and said, we have plan B if we need to go to plan B. We have plan C. We have plan D. They've been smart about this, that they have multiple contingency plans. They're basically, they've already said, they made it official yesterday, they're not going to do overseas games. Every game's going to be played in the U.S. So I don't really have a problem with it.
I don't have a problem with it either. You know, a lot of people were criticizing the NFL draft before the NFL draft happened because the NFL was just going to go ahead with it, even though it was all virtual, and thought that it wasn't right to do the NFL draft amid the pandemic. And what that draft did was give 32 fan bases hope for their team and take their mind off everything that was going on in the news at the time.
Exactly.
And that is a much bigger event than just the schedule release. But I guarantee you, Thursday night, 7 o'clock Central, you know, ESPN, they're going to have a three-hour show around the NFL schedule release, which a lot of people would say is ridiculous. And I know I'm not going to sit there and watch a three-hour show about the NFL schedule. But it gives 32 fan bases something to look forward to, assuming things continue to trend in the right direction and, you know, we can get sports back. No, fans may not be in these at these games, and I think a lot of fans would be okay with that because that's better than the alternative, which is what we're going through right now. So I don't have a problem at all with the NFL releasing its schedule. It's later. It's already later than what it would have been. I mean,
yeah, usually it's before the draft.
Right. It's usually a week or two before the draft. So they've already put it off due to everything. I've heard that the NFL is going to put out their contingency plan if they have to move back the start of the season to possibly October from September, if they have to do that because of a delayed start to training camp or the preseason. And, you know, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with them coming out with, here's what the schedule should be, and if we have to change, here's what our contingency plan is. And here's the NFL again. They first did it with free agency. They did it with the draft. They're now doing it with the schedule release of maximizing their brand while everyone is stuck at home. And I'm sure ESPN is going to get great ratings on Thursday night for that schedule release show.
Yeah, I believe they will too, and they should, because people are curious. I mean, just like the conversation that we would have if this were normal times would be, okay, the Titans went to the AFC title game. How many primetime games do we think they're going to get? How many should they get? And I say three, because that's on par with them. They'll probably, I think they get one of each. They get a Thursday, a Monday, and a Sunday. That's what I think, and that's the conversation that we usually would be having. But instead, we're sitting here going, well, should they release the schedule? Should they not? They absolutely should. The question is going to be not if they play the 17-week regular season schedule. The big one is going to be, do they play a preseason schedule? Because I could see a situation where they don't, or they play one preseason game. Each team gets one preseason game. Mm-hmm. That's what I think could be affected. No Hall of Fame game, none of that stuff. That's what probably ends up happening, but I think they figure out a way to get it in.
But the schedule that they're going to release this week includes the Hall of Fame game and a full preseason schedule. So
I think they've announced the Hall of Fame game.
I know you are saying that you think that's what it will end up being and not what they will announce this week. But
yeah, Steelers-Cowboys be the Hall of Fame game.
Okay, I must have missed that at some point. So, look, Peter King, and I get why he's bringing it up with the tickets, but it's not like if they announce it in June or July, people are going to be racing to their laptops to go get tickets and book flights to see their teams, because they ever think everybody knows that these games are going to go on without fans. Go on without fans.
And if they don't, the NFL doesn't have to struggle. Well, I take that back. There are some teams that do struggle to sell tickets, but people will pay attention to the product is what I'm trying to say. That's going to do it for the rundown. We will do it again tomorrow at 9 o'clock, but stick around. Darren Donican Chase, that is next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.